Live Line on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry, bringing you great savings on curtains and bedding. Available all year in store and online at harrycurry.com.
0818 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon, and you're very welcome to Live Line. Punishment for the children of the Republic. In recent years, seven-year-old maid stand on the windowsill, facing out onto the public street with a dunce's hat on her head. Another boy being kicked down the stairs by the principal, the head brother in the school, and subsequently, at the age of 39, had a brain hemorrhage. Another young girl, her face smashed into a blackboard because she had difficulty, because of her eyesight, reading the board. Beaten by the leg of a chair by an adult teacher, beaten by with a fishing rod by a Christian brother, lettered. You heard about the letter that was specially built, specially made, specially manufactured to beat children. Beaten by a bamboo sticks, and the bamboo was harvested from the child's garden that the teacher used to beat him with that day. The child sent out every morning into the yard and to the hedge nearby to cut a new stick to be used by the teacher in the school. And the list goes on and on and on. The way we treated people, people who are alive today and talking. PJ, good afternoon, PJ.
Good afternoon, Joe, and thanks very much for having me on.
Yeah, thank you for contacting us. Now, the wire waste paper basket.
Yes, yes. Well, just to put a bit of context on it, Joe, yeah. I'm 62 now and I was 9 years old at that stage. But it was at the top of our class at the time, and it was a strong wire basket. It was made with steel wire.
Yeah.
And it was about maybe 2.5 feet high, maybe 3 at the most. Quite a big basket, but the wire, the basket was made up of diamond shapes, if you can imagine what you see in a tennis court these days or whatever. But around the top of the rim, half of the last row of the wire diamonds went around the rim. Now, in those days, we wore short pants, of course, and this particular brother used to like to put us sitting in that basket. He'd leave us there in front of the class for long periods of time. Now, it wasn't just me. It was any kid he just took his fancy to doing it. And our weight would make us gradually slip down into the basket. And the bare backs of our knees would get cut off those teeth. And they cut into the bare flesh. And basically, I remember on one occasion, they were never healing because as soon as you got healed in any way, if you saw that there were scabs in the back of it, you could nearly be certain today is my day in the bin again. And I remember on one occasion the GP having to lance an infection that wouldn't heal. So that was normal. That was a normal situation for us, unfortunately.
And I'm sure if I had said at the start, and we have a child who was punished with the wire waste paper basket, people immediately imagine the wire. They know what a wire waste paper basket. And then they say, what did they do? The teacher upended and the child had to sit up in the corner of the class and be ridiculed or whatever, like a dunce, so to speak, whatever that awful phrase means. And then we discover, no, the teacher actually sat you into the basket
and let
you sink down slowly.
Yes, yes. And of course, for many years, I suppose, usage, they were quite sharp. And your legs were dangling up above your head half the time because the weight of your body went down. So all of the weight of your body was pulling on your knees. And on another occasion, it was my turn. We used to have to pick flowers for the May altar.
Yeah.
And on another occasion, it was my turn to pick them. And we would put them in a vase at the end of the room under the statue of Our Lady.
Yeah.
And an excuse was found one day. And I say this is very important. An excuse was always found. It wasn't the case that children were bold or they did anything wrong. It was just simply that they, this was going to happen. It didn't matter how it happened. It was going to happen. But actually, my punishment for maybe getting a wrong spelling or getting a wrong sum or whatever, I was made to go to the vase in front of everybody, take the flowers out of the vase that I had brought in and eat them in front of the class.
Eat the flowers, the wildflowers.
Eat the flowers. Eat the wildflowers, wildflowers. I can remember them. Even to this day when I smell wildflowers, it reminds me. And I love wildflowers. But actually, that, you know, that those kinds of things, and this is something I think
that's
teacher, very important.
And the teacher, sorry, Peter, the teacher stood there, instructed you to eat the flowers, and stood there as you chewed them and swallowed them.
Not only that, he encouraged the other people in the class to jeer and laugh and, you know, at you. Because now, I wasn't being treated any different than the rest of those children, because we were all in the same boat. We were all encouraged as well to engage in that kind of behaviour with other children who were being punished. So it was I think what's really important, Joe, I'd like to get across today is that this was systemic. This was not isolated incidents that... Yeah. I mean, you're talking there to an awful lot of people from across the country, and I'm delighted that people have found the courage to speak about these kinds of incidences, because today I'm only telling you about two incidences in a 12-year period. Like, you can imagine what I witnessed and what other children witnessed in a 12-year period between primary and secondary school. And I just want to say that the problem with this is, I suppose for most people, is that our parents as well, we were in, for all intents and purposes, a very oppressive state, in the sense that our parents were also in a position where if they complained, they knew, even where they knew, they actually found themselves coming in under, getting hit by the power of the church as well. They were actually, so they felt powerless in so many ways as well.
Yeah.
And the other thing to say is that this was happening in residential schools, but it was happening every day in day schools, and there has never been anybody really talking about it. So I want to compliment you for that, because nobody has been talking about what happened to us on a daily basis.
Well, that's right. It's right back to you, PJ, and the other colleagues. You're the ones that are bringing this to public attention, and that's really appreciated and a privilege to sit here, being able to listen to the horror, unfortunately, the images that will not leave your head. That image of you as a 6, 7, 8-year-old child being forced to sit into a wire basket, gradually sink down. I can see the image sink down. Who even came up with that torture?
It seemed to have. There were some people very inventive when it came to doing things to us. I mean, we had another brother who actually, when he would send kids around the yard to catch you when you were playing tig and accuse you of fighting in the yard, he would bring you up after lunchtime, and if you were in that line, he would basically ask you, "Do you want to be hit with the boss of the hurley, or do you want to be hit with the handle of the hurley?" That was the choice that we got: slapped with the boss or slapped with the handle. Which would you prefer? So for doing nothing, for playing, for actually playing in the playground. And like the problem, this is where I suppose it needs to be said that there were no limits. There were absolutely no consequences.
No consequences.
And the question that people will be asking now, and people have been even saying to me as we were listening to some of the discussions, that yes, thankfully people have been arrested and brought to justice for, we'll say, the sexual abuse and so on of children. But actually, you know, first of all, nobody has ever really brought this up to the extent that you're bringing it up, which is very important. But this, I suppose, in a sense, is that will this discussion that we're having, and I'm hoping it will, Joel, you know, will this discussion lead to a much more fuller and more transparent inquiry into this issue? Because at the moment, you know, and if, you know, I wonder how many victims of any real fate, if you like, that the religious orders or the people who committed those crimes will ever be called to answer for them in any manner.
And even when we, as emerged yesterday, Madeline, she's Geffen told us the story of David Moore, and he was, 7 years of age? He was badly beaten up in school, horrifically beaten. His parents took it to court.
Yes.
And they eventually won. They were looking for their lawyers or whatever were looking for some form of punishment of the perpetrators who were brothers, and some form of compensation. And when the judge asked them what compensation do you think would be anyway adequate, and they said £1,500, and the judge awarded them 1 shilling.
1 shilling.
That was a statement. And then I was reading another case last night. Seamus Keighley from Blackditch Road in Ballyfermot in 1967, near where I grew up, the stone's throw from where I grew up. In 1967, he was savagely beaten in Mary Queen of Angels Schools. The beating was so intense that even though the child was in an overcoat when he was beaten, there were welts on his back, according to the local doctor. The family complained to the school. The school manager was Canon Troy, a figure who ran Ballyfermot in the 50s, 60s and 70s. This is the man, the priest in Ballyfermot, when a group of locals tried to set up a cooperative shop, shop, because there was no proper shops in the area. He deemed that they were communists and he shut down. He read them from the pulpit. But anyway, Canon Troy, the parents went to the Department of Education. They said, no, you have to go to the manager of the school first, who was Canon Michael Troy. He interviewed the child, the seven-year-old child, on his own, Seamus Keighley. He interviewed him and he determined that the seven-year-old child was a liar. The family bravely, I don't know how they did it in those days, bravely went to the district court. They lost the case. Bravely appealed it to the High Court and they lost their case. So even though people who were who tried to do something were just turned away by the Department of Education, by the church and by the courts. Yes. PJ, go ahead, finish, PJ.
Just want to say one thing and thank you, because I do have somewhere to be at too, but I just want to say this to you. Thank you for that. And it's just said that, you know, a lot of the time, even in terms of the sexual abuse thing, for example, it has been said a number of times that religious orders haven't yet even paid the monies required as part of that redress system, right? And actually, it's not about money, and it's not about that at all. But it's about how we in Ireland tend to snip around the edges when it comes to the church. Snip around the edges. Like, for example, if you don't pay your taxes, you know, your property could be seized by the state. Has even one piece of property been seized to make religious orders pay their part in the redress? In fact, my experience is the opposite is still happening, where they still have their hands out and they're still asking people to pay them, to put in roofs and so on and so forth. So I'm just asking, what I'd like to see happening, Joe, is, and I know that you would too, would be another, I hope this, the opportunity for people to talk, to open up old scars and being brave enough to speak out, will be followed by something a bit more concrete by the government and we have a new election coming, and I'd really like people to take it seriously that we want this, because in all fairness, this affected thousands of people. Yeah. People probably had post-traumatic stress.
Yeah, we're hearing it.
Yeah.
People in the 50s, 60s, 70s and 80s. PJ, Patrick is on the line from the UK. Patrick, you used the phrase that you were fat shamed and subject to horrific.
Joe.
How are you?
I'm okay. How are you? Thanks for having me on.
Tell your story, because the phrase that you actually get, the punishment that you get to is, I won't say beyond belief, because anyone who's listened to it the last few days knows that nothing is beyond belief. Patrick, you say, I was a chubby kid, not unusual by any stretch.
Yeah. So I was a chubby kid and I wasn't into sport, and I went to a school, a Christian Brothers school, where sport was considered, you know, the top of the ladder kind of thing. So although I was quite bright academically, I managed to get through the school, I was never popular with the Christian Brothers for us. Okay. So a couple of things happened. There were two things that came to mind when you were speaking and all the callers were telling you their experiences over the last few days. So the first one was, again, and just your last caller mentioned something similar, in that the teacher would get the boys in the class to jeer along. So I had done something bad. I can't remember. It wasn't anything terrible. I wasn't a terrible student by any stretch. I don't know what I'd done. But the teacher said, and it was a lay teacher, it wasn't a Christian Brother.
Okay.
He said he was going to hit me until I begged him to stop. And he had a stick. It wasn't like a leather. It was a thick stick. And he hit me on both hands, like one hand and then the other hand back again. And he was going to do that until I begged him to stop. And I thought in my head, And I must have been about 9 at the time. Yeah. I thought, I'm not going to beg you to stop. I don't care. You can kill me. I'm literally not going to beg you. So he hit me, and the boys in the class were counting each one.
Oh, my gosh.
And it must have, I can't quite remember, it must have gone past 30 or 40. And my hands were, like, so swollen. And I was looking at him, and I wasn't going to ask him to stop. And then I think he got a bit frightened about how far it was going. So he stopped. And I remember thinking, you know, I've won this. But I also, you know, it stayed with me for a really long time. It stayed with me. I'm 60 now. It stayed with me till now. And I just think it changed me a little bit. I had to go to a place that was I shouldn't have had to go to, I think, to not ask for that punishment to stop. And, that stayed with me for a long time. Well, it stayed with me till now.
And
the other one, talking about the fat-shamed one, so there are just two incidents that really came back to me. And once I was late for school, the bus stopped at the bus carriage, and I stayed on the bus rather than get off and walk. It was about 3 stops.
Yeah.
And I was late by about 10 minutes, I think. And when I got there, the head Christian brother was there. And he caught me, and he said, and I explained what happened. And he said, I remember thinking, well, I'll tell you what he said. He said something to the extent of, you know, you didn't get off that bus because you're a little fat slob and someday we'll need a bulldozer to lift you up. But when he said it, and he was much taller than me, he was a big man. I remember thinking, God, he has hate in his eyes. And it just seemed ridiculous in some way, but also like he ruled the school.
He was the adult.
The Catholic religion altogether.
Yeah, but this was an adult assaulting a child.
Yeah.
It's a crime.
I would say so.
And to go back to the teacher who, in front of the class, said, I am going to hit you until you, Patrick, beg me to stop.
Yeah.
You have to beg me to stop.
Yeah.
So he started hitting you. And what condition were your hands in after 30 or 40?
Black and blue and swollen. I had to hide them from home because it wasn't, you know, I came from, you know, a house where the school and the teachers and the Christian brothers were all, you know, very respected. No one wanted to hear bad stories about them. So I had to hide them at home.
Mm-hmm.
But it took about 4 days for them to, calm down. And that wasn't unusual. I mean, I did really quite, you know, I was quite bright academically, so I kind of had a way through.
Okay.
So I saw worse things. Those two things genuinely stayed with me.
And you're a young man, you're 60, and you did allude there to Patrick, I'm trying to remember the phrase you used, that when you bested him, so to speak, even though you were in severe pain, and you said to yourself, I've won, I've won against this man. Did you say it something changed in you that day?
Yeah, I think so. I think I became a little bit, I don't really know how to put it into words, but I think I became a bit harder than I needed to, than I should have been. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I don't really know how to say this, but to protect yourself that much, you kind of have to remove yourself from the world a little bit.
Yeah.
And that stayed with me. I mean, I feel that I've processed a lot of stuff.
Yeah, well done,
But it was hard, you know. I had to go to counselling and stuff in my adulthood. I got very angry at one point in my adulthood, and I thought, I need to figure this all out. So I sort of have, you know, these things are complicated. And people find their ways through their life, don't they? And I did well in that school. I saw boys who didn't do well.
Yeah.
You know, who didn't.
Yeah.
I think there are probably boys who didn't survive like I did.
Yeah. Okay, Patrick, thanks. Thanks indeed. Joe at rt.ie 51551 is our text number. Mary, good afternoon, Mary.
Good afternoon, Joe. Thank you for having me on to tell of my experiences in school. As a child, I suffered physical, emotional violence and trauma. I went to a rural primary school.
Okay, Mary, hang on. I'm due a break anyway. Sorry for holding it. Just, I'll take the quick break and we'll try and improve your line because your contribution is so important. joe@rte.ie.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
I had a profound stammer which took me 50 years to finally beat. I am now 61 and stammer freely with no fear, but I lived with fear for 50 years principally because of those early days in school. One example. When I could not recite the 8 times tables, I was slapped and sent out to the yard in midwinter to sit in the open air school shed till I learnt them. Came back in and still had a stammer, strangely enough. Got beaten and was sent back out. It was over 50 years, so I can't recall exactly how many times or how long, but I will never forget the fear or humiliation. This is one example of hundreds of similar humiliations.
I remember this one nun in primary school. Somebody drew a picture of her on the blackboard and instead of two legs, they put in a tail. The nun was furious. The pupil beside me stared at me because I asked her, did she do it? The nun then thought it was me with my red face. She brought me outside the room and slapped me so hard on the face, she damaged my nose and I still have a bump on the side of my nose. I was afraid to tell my mum what happened.
I can empathise with what's been said. I also lost my ability to speak. Another story from the mid-1950s. My father was a solicitor in a small country town. A woman came to him stating that her son was so badly beaten by teachers that the skin on his buttocks was broken and he couldn't sit down. She asked my father to write a letter to the school stating it was unacceptable and she'd take legal action. They gave it to the parish priest, who returned it to the woman and threatened he would read her name from the altar. That boy never went back to school again, even though he was only in primary school. They got away with it.
Mary is back. Mary, you say you're in your 70s and you're still wounded, embarrassed and traumatised by what you couldn't give your family. What happened, Mary?
Absolutely. I went to a rural primary school. It was a two-teacher school.
Yeah.
And both the teachers were female. From the very first day that I entered that school as a 5-year-old, I was beaten. I was beaten every day to the point of collapsing.
God. 5 years of age.
One time I remember as I was being beaten, I was hoping I would go unconscious so that she couldn't beat me anymore.
A child was hoping that you'd...
Yes, exactly. And then maybe I'd have to go to hospital and the teacher wouldn't be able to beat me. These were the thoughts that I had. I believed that I deserved every beating that I got because I couldn't answer the questions the teacher asked me. Now, most of the class had a nickname. Yeah. And there was a nickname put on me.
Yeah.
So I was never called. Occasionally, I would be called by my first name. But my second name, I was called an animal, a particular animal. So that name, yeah. Name of the animal, stayed with me.
Yeah.
So that's what I was called.
Yeah.
After suffering continuous beatings from infant class, I was hoping that I wouldn't be beaten by my new teacher,
yeah.
who was the principal.
Okay.
So the beatings and the abuse continued. And I was told every day that I was useless. And I was thick.
Oh, my God.
And I'd never come to anything.
And when you went home, Mary?
I'll just finish this for you.
Yeah, please do. Yeah.
I cried every day
yeah.
at the thought of going to school. I learned nothing out of fear. One day I pretended to my mother that I was very sick.
Yeah.
And I was relieved that I wasn't going to school that day. So later that morning, my teacher drove to my house.
Oh.
She stormed into the kitchen and she pulled me by my arm out into her car, shoved me into the seat beside her and brought me back to school. Now, I just want to mention here that we had a choir and we used to sing. I was considered a good singer.
Okay.
And I was able to dance. But every time I gave a wrong answer in the class, my teachers would remind me that that's all I was good for and that I wasn't capable of anything else. I was a dunce at everything. When my teacher brought me back to the class, she put me at the back of the room. She got a clothes hanger and she proceeded to beat me. She lashed me and lashed me and lashed me. She lashed my legs with full force until both of my legs were swollen from my ankles to my knees. And while she was beating me, she said, "Go now and dance a reel for us." And after the beating, I tried my best to do as I was told and to dance the reel with my blackened, bruised legs collapsing under me. And while I was dancing, she shouted at me, "All you're good for is dancing and singing." And for many years after that, I felt that I shouldn't sing. It was wrong to sing. It was wrong to dance. My teacher told me that. Now, that's as a result of all them horrific experiences. There are many more that I could tell you. They are too horrific to mention. And there are many stories that are horrific and would shock you. But these stories and those experiences belongs to others in the class. Yeah. And it's for them to tell them.
Yeah.
As a result of the abuses, when I left the day I left that school, I was broken in mind, body, soul and spirit. I was so afraid. I was so sad. I was so alone.
And
I was so confused. I didn't know who I was. The memories of that school haunts me to this very day. It affected my relationships. It affected me as a mother. It affects me today.
Now, you refer to another episode, Mary, if you wish to talk about it. You were about 11. Somebody asked, I don't know, was it you asked, what's the difference?
Actually, if it's okay to say it, wasn't asked of me. It was asked for another pupil.
Okay.
I don't know whether I should tell it or not.
Well, what you don't? We haven't named the school or identified, but that pupil asked, teacher, what's the difference?
The teacher asked asked the class.
Yeah.
What's the difference between boys and girls?
Yeah.
So the teacher pulled down she took a child at random from the seat.
Yeah.
And pulled up her dress, removed her underwear. "This is the difference," she said.
Oh my God.
There was two other instances. I don't know whether I should tell them or not. I really don't.
Okay.
If it's okay.
Well, that incident you've just described, man, is sexual assault.
Absolutely. Exactly.
And the children, I know you're only children, Mary.
Also, just sorry for interrupting you there as you mentioned that. Coming up to summer, holidays, we would have to wash the floors and wash the desks and all that. So I was washing at the desk one day. So my teacher came behind me.
Yeah.
and she pretended that she was pitying me, that my dress might get wet from the washing of the desks, because I had a basin of water. But instead of that, she pulled my dress up and tied my dress into a knot from the back, so that my underwear was exposed. That was to humiliate me. But as I said, there was other horrific things that absolutely were shocking.
And Mary, you mentioned your own life then. Did you tell your children? Have you told your children?
I told my children.
Okay.
They were shocked.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And why? Tell me, now why not? But why did you tell your children? What prompted that?
Because one of my children had a bad experience in school as well.
Yeah, okay.
And they often talk about that.
Yeah.
Their experiences wasn't nice either.
Yeah.
But as I have said to you there, the other things that I witnessed were truly shocking. Truly shocking.
And that image of the teacher driving to the school, the teacher, the reason you weren't in school because she was beating you so savagely, she arrives up in your house and goes into your home. Was your mother there?
My mother was there. My mother said nothing. My mother was afraid of the teachers.
Yeah, yeah.
That's the way things were.
Yeah.
The teachers were an authority and that was it.
I should also refer to be fair to everybody. I mentioned a case earlier on, Seamus Keeley, 7 years of age, savagely beaten. His parents, so brave, took a case. The parish priest, Canon Troy, accused the 7-year-old of being a liar. They went to the district court. They lost the case. They went to the high court. They lost the case. But one of the other groups that opposed them vehemently were the Irish National Teachers Organization. And Senator Sean Brosnan, who was the General Secretary, he said in the court case, he was adamant in defence of the teachers' use of corporal punishment, and he was scathing of the boy himself. He knew, this is the General Secretary then of the INTO, so everyone in authority was colluding. According to Brosnan, the boy knew that his conduct was reprehensible and he had tried to conceal it. And it was almost incredible that the boy could mislead a 7 years of age, Mary. You can relate. The boy could mislead his mother, the lawyers, Senator Sheehy Skeffington, and other people cooperating with him, and lead them into a high court case and a charge against a teacher, which was a tissue of lies. Well, we know it wasn't a tissue of lies, but you're right, the collusion, and you wouldn't be believed. You wouldn't be believed.
My goodness.
Yeah.
Horrific.
Okay, Mary, thanks indeed. And your children are with you and supportive now, I hope, I presume.
Yes, yeah, they are indeed. Yeah. They are indeed, Joe.
I am so sorry.
I'm just glad that I got this opportunity.
Yeah. Okay.
When I heard all those other letters
and
being
more
read out and all those.
Yeah. Mary, I'm so sorry for what happened to you as a child.
Well, thank you so much. Thank you so much, Joe.
Thank you, Mary.
That's Mary. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Annette, good afternoon.
Hello, Joe.
Okay, you say, because of what happened to you in school, and this would be the 60s, 1960s, I have a fear all my life of people standing over me.
Yes, yeah.
What happened?
Especially, well, we had a nun that would punish us with the leg of a chair or a pen.
Yeah.
And, you know, while we were doing our work in the classroom, she'd walk up and down between the aisles. And if she stopped and looked over your shoulder, you just were waiting for the pen to come down on your head. I was saying earlier to myself, a tap, 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 but it wasn't a tap, tap, tap. It was a vicious hit on your head, I don't know, 4, 5, 6 times maybe, if you had something wrong. And that travelled with me, I think, into my adulthood. And I didn't realise at the time, but I was studying for a certificate course, and part of it was to do computers.
Okay.
But when the teacher would come around and stand behind me to look at the work, I would be nervous and I'd have a dread over me. But I didn't really, I suppose, associate it with the school actually at that time, it was only later years I was thinking about it, and I was thinking, why have I that dread? Why have I that fear? And it was because of her coming around. And sometimes she had a leg of the chair. She might poke you in the back with the leg of the chair or hit you on the head with the leg of the chair as well. And I suppose that held me back in some things. And another thing with me was that we were rehearsing. I was picked to play the lead role of Misha Era in the school.
Okay.
And I was standing on a stool, you know, reading the
This would be the 50th anniversary. Around that time, Misha Era was big, and the 50th anniversary of the 1916 Rising, the birth of our republic, yes. And one of the standout lines, obviously had no meaning, cherish the children of the nation equally. It looked like it was beat the children equally and punish them within the confines of a state institution where you're supposed to be safe, i.e. an education system. So you're doing Misha Era, and what happened?
Yeah, just practicing for the role and reading the lines from the blackboard. As far as I remember, there was about four lines, I had to say. But I got some of it wrong, and I got a whack on the back of my legs with the leg of the chair. And that was terrible. I don't know, you know, I just remember that feeling and the shock of that coming. And this is just rehearsing for a play. So that kind of put me off drama. When I went to secondary school then, I never went near drama. And it wasn't compulsory then. You could join if you wanted to. But I just never did. It's just... I think I had the fear of God in me, I suppose, or the fear of the nun in me, for want of another word. Yeah. But I've kind of brought some of those things, and I feel a bit of a fake in a way, because I'm not, my story is not as harrowing as some of the others. It's my story, I suppose, at the end of the day as well. It's my, how it affected me through life.
Yeah.
Two of the girls, I think, at one time in the class hid the leg of the chair on her. And her punishment then for everybody was we all had to go out to the garden and cut the grass with the scissors. A friend of mine just reminded me of that there a few days ago. She had a garden, and that's the only time I don't think we were in fear of her, because she loved gardening. She could have been, if she hadn't been an under Charlie Dimmock of her time, maybe.
Yeah.
But we would be out weeding. And even though we were weeding and weeding, I felt safer out there anyway. I don't know about everybody else. It just seemed to be a sanctuary away from the classroom. You had that fear.
But the effect, you're explaining once again the awful effect. The whole thing you're doing, you're rehearsing for Misha Era. You're up on the chair doing something on the blackboard for the play. It's supposed to celebrate 50 years since the birth of our republic as such. And it's supposed to be a year of celebration, by the way. Croke Park and Easter Sunday and all this carry on. You're beaten on the back of the leg for no reason, and it puts you off drama.
And my family, my father would have been into drama at the time, and I was sorry I didn't follow in his footsteps, but I would have always been behind the scenes, maybe. I don't know. I'm not sure. I don't have any psychological reasons to confirm that or anything, but it probably was. Sorry, I didn't think I was going to get upset, but...
Well, you're not alone in that. You're not alone. You're not alone in getting upset, but you're also not alone in... telling your story, and also you're not alone in experiencing what you experience.
I think some parents in the vicinity went to the canon to complain about this particular teacher.
Yeah.
And as far as I know, after that then, they wouldn't have got the pen or the leg of the chair in school. I'm not sure, my parents are not alive now to ask them, but I'm not sure if my father would have gone and complained. I'm sure he would.
Yeah.
He was that type of person.
Yeah.
But,
okay, Annette.
Anyway, I suppose, they were harrowing times for a lot of people. And as you say as well, we've brought it into our adult life. And I've been in a learning situation a few times like that, not just computers, but I was in working a photographer's one time, and the owner was showing me how to print out the photographs.
Yeah.
And I just had a dread would come over me.
Right.
And I couldn't explain at the time, what's wrong with me? You know, I want to learn this, and I was very interested in photography at the time. But that fear, I don't think, will ever leave me.
Yeah.
that dread that something is going to happen, you know.
And it's been proven again and again and again, the long-term effect that these horrific, horrific, illegal crimes, these are crimes that were inflicted on children. On children.
Awful.
You heard the child yesterday, Annette. He was 50 months old, 4 years and two months. A baby.
God.
A baby.
It was awful. Yeah.
Okay, Annette, thank
you. And the fear, I suppose, that everybody had from the religious and the teaching, you know, fraternity or whatever. It was awful. Thanks, Joe, for listening to my story.
Thank you, Annette, for telling your story. It's a privilege to be able to hear it. Let's hear more voices.
I was in infants and recall being brought up to the teacher's desk and being made to write with my right hand. I had to have my left hand on the edge of the teacher's table so she could whack it with two sticks.
I was in senior infants one particular day, doing maths for the teacher in front of the class. I got every answer bar one wrong, and I got a smack for every one, with the smacks getting worse and worse as it went on. I eventually wet myself. Being sent to the corner of the class was part and parcel of my school experience. It was never more embarrassing than when the priest came in. My younger brother was in the same class the next year, and he started cursing at the teacher. He wouldn't hold back. I got sent home to get my dad to come in and calm my brother down. As has already been said on your show, there really was more crying than laughing in Irish classrooms.
Back in the 50s, my abiding memory of my time at national school was at age of 5, when a brother put his hand up the leg of my short pants. I let out a squeal and he took out this small leather from his cassock, not like the ones I experienced in later classes, and whacked me. While it wasn't by any means as awful as others on your show have been, it is, however, at 77 years of age, still imprinted in my brain. As a result of my time in the school, I dropped out of religion at a very early age. I lost all trust in the guys dressed in black, whether brothers or priests. Although there were a few nice guys, most of them were pure evil. I witnessed some awful abuses to some classmates. I hated school. I got my fair share of the strap. I didn't do very well in school, but managed to do well in my life.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
I was an only child and lived in a rural area. It was my neighbour, also a little girl, who brought me to start at my first day in national school. The first teacher to meet me was the teacher of the higher classes. She hooked me with the crook of her cane and told me I'd know all about this if I misbehaved. I was a shy 5-year-old. It had a huge effect on me. A few weeks later, a girl in my classroom who lived with her granny was beaten badly with a cane by her infants teacher. She took a set against some children, I've no idea why. Anyway, this girl's granny came to the school the next day and tattled the teacher. As soon as the granny was gone, the teacher took the girl outside and beat her. We could hear the swish of the cane as she continued to beat her across the legs, roaring. She said, "Now go home and tell your granny." Needless to say, none of us told what happened that day when we went home. We lived in fear. A few weeks later, another child told the teacher that I had thrown my lunch over the high wall into the field next door. I hadn't, of course. My mum always gave me some white sliced pan, and the ones in the field were two doorstop slices of dry soda bread, and they were lying next to a cowpat. The teacher beat me across the wall with the cane until I had to climb out over the wall and got them back. She then made me eat the bread. I got sick on her shoes as a result. She called me a dirty thing and beat me outside again. There was only one teacher who was unfailingly kind. A great teacher. The master used the cane, but not to the same extent. He treated everyone fairly like that. The level of cruelty in that school by two teachers scarred many of us for the rest of our life.
Deirdre, good afternoon.
Joe, how are you?
Good. You were physically and verbally abused in every day in 1969 and 6 years thereafter. Why?
Yep.
Why?
I had an identical twin sister.
Yeah.
So the nuns just used to call us devil spawn. It wasn't normal for two children to look identically the same.
My God.
When we were started school, we didn't speak much English. We had our own little language. So okay. Again, that was against us. And they just took a dislike to us. And we have learning disabilities, which of course wasn't recognized yeah. then at all. And so we were just very slow in learning. And as a result of that, beaten every single day. The hair ribbons pulled out of our hair because other children didn't have them. It was just unbelievable.
And when,
but it was very normal. We weren't okay. the only ones.
And you remember what age you were, Deirdre, yourself and your identical twin, when this phrase was used, you're the devil's spawn?
5. Our second year in school. And, you know, it was just relentless. Never, never ended the abuse. They even put in a resource centre like a few years later. It was one of the first mm-hmm. in the school. And the teacher would knock on the door, can the retarded, stupid children please come out for their special classes?
Yeah.
And you had to get up, walk out, and attend those classes, which are useless. The teacher was an alcoholic. So you can imagine how much that happened. So whenever they got an opportunity, they just used it.
And were the two of you punished publicly together? In other words...
Yes. Yeah. Every single day. So you talked in line.
Yeah.
You were pulled out of the line yeah. with a few other students who would be talking in line, lined up by the blackboard, two hands out, the big, thick wooden rulers now, not the light, thin little ones. They had white in the middle of them, and you'd be whacked against, you know, your hands would be whacked for talking in line. So that started 4 years of age right through.
So you'd be with your sister, the two of you would be
yep,
together.
The two of us, yeah.
When you're being punished.
Oh, yes.
And could you help each other in any way?
Of course we did. Well, you know, we cuddled each other, you know, afterwards.
You cuddled each other.
You know, cuddled each other afterwards, cried in the classroom. You kept crying, you were punished more. We'd walk home for our lunch, you know, wouldn't say anything to our parents. Never said anything. You know, children didn't back then.
I know.
Yeah, children didn't back then. And, you know, as we got older, you know, we weren't learning any faster. And they yeah. just sent us out into the courtyard or into the yard with a knife to pick up the weeds. You're too stupid to stay in class. That's all you're good for. Clean the yard. So for all of the pupils of the school could see you.
Yeah. You and your sister.
Yeah, me and my sister. Now, we did fine in life, Joe.
Yeah.
But the emotional trauma, you know, you never get over it. Absolutely never. And unfortunately, it was just normal.
Yeah. And when you left that school at primary level?
Yeah, we went to another school then. It was a private school run by lovely nuns. If it wasn't for them, sure, we would never have succeeded.
Yeah.
They gave us extra classes at lunchtime and everything.
Right.
Because we weren't even reading.
Yeah. You couldn't read at the end. Yeah.
10 years of age, we couldn't read. No.
But you could.
So I remember, there was two Americans that came to the school, so they needed extra classes in Irish.
Yeah.
And they would just put us in with them. But they never put us down. They said, you'll be fine, you'll be grand. Just work a little bit now on that. And we did. We succeeded. I became a teacher, Joe, at the end of it.
Brilliant.
Not in Ireland now. I went to Canada.
Brilliant.
But I became a teacher. Yeah.
Congratulations, Deirdre. What an addition and a gift you would have been to a classroom.
Oh, wow.
What an addition. You know, do you still hold, do you still cuddle, Deirdre, do you still cuddle your sister?
Of course we do. Yeah. Of course we do. Yeah, I'm in the car with her at the moment. Yeah.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
But if it wasn't the two of us, we wouldn't have survived. I don't know how children on their own survived it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, cuddle her there, would you, and say...
I will, I give her a big cuddle now.
You're two brilliant, brilliant people. You're two brilliant, brilliant people. Thanks, Deirdre.
Thanks, Joe. Thanks for having your show. Bye.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Joe Duffy.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
This week of your show has brought up some very old and raw wounds. I had a teacher in junior infants who refused to teach me because I was left-handed. I was forced to sit at the back of the class and ignored while my classmates were taught to read and write using books handed out by the teacher. I would do my best to learn by copying my classmates using a copybook my parents bought me. I was always a shy, quiet child, but whenever someone acted up, the teacher would hit them on the wrist with the yellow wooden ruler, then point at me saying, "You're next." Fortunately, my parents finally got involved, and I was moved up to first class, where I repeated the year to help me catch up. This was in 1987. Thankfully, the new teacher was an angel whom I will forever be grateful to. But the nightmare returned in sixth class when the teacher would get enjoyment in trying to get his students to break down in tears. He beat many children. While in public, he was a pillar of the community. He never made me cry, and that's the only small victory I have over him. I will hold on to these scars for the rest of my life, but I am eternally grateful for my beautiful wife and children who showed me there is good in the world.
Last Friday, I cried listening to the show. You can count me as another number, another victim, beaten ragged by the Christian Brothers in primary school. It was that bad that I'd wet the bed at home and get in trouble there for that. One day I couldn't do my exercises because there were lumps on my hands from being leathered. I'd got the leather across the head as well. I spent 2 hours stood staring at the wall before being sent out to weed the garden as penance for the state of my hands. I left school at 14, unable to read or write, but somehow knew the catechism back to front, though I wouldn't have been able to read it. I went to technical school and ended up doing well for myself as a tradesman.
Jamie is on the line. Jamie's in Galway. Jamie.
Hi, Joe. Can you hear me okay?
Loud and clear. Loud and clear.
Good, man. Okay. Yeah, my phone is in my left hand, and I don't know if it's early onset of Parkinson's or nerves that has it shaking. Mm-hmm. I've been listening to the program for 2-3 days, and I've witnessed firsthand a lot of the stuff that was described. My first day at school, I was born with two misfortunes. A lot of people that were on your program came from poor backgrounds and were harassed, bullied and beaten because they were poor. I think I was misfortunate because I came from a very comfortable middle-class family. I went to school very well-dressed, white socks and all of that. I got a lot of stick and bad time and bullying for that in itself. Mm-hmm. But my first day at school was an interesting experience. I did something wrong, and a lovely teacher she was, elderly lady, brought me up, and she gently put her hand on my face. Mm-hmm. And I was a bit bemused by this.
Yeah.
And I asked one of the classmates at lunchtime, "What was that?" And he said, "You'll find out when you go into the next room." And I did. Because when I progressed on to, what was it, third or fourth class, I can't remember. Yes, the teacher positioned my head in a certain way, and I got the clatter. I knew from then on what was in store. It was horrendous. She managed to turn me into an atheist at 7 or 8 or 9 or 10 years of age. I can't quite remember. We got homework. I couldn't do the sum, couldn't figure it out. I asked my dad to help me, and he showed me how to do the sum, but his methodology was different to what the teacher showed me. Anyway, playing cute, I put down the answer he gave me and what I thought was the methodology that the teacher had shown me. And okay. I was chosen on Monday morning to have my homework examined. And she said, "You went to the cupboard and you took out the answer book, didn't you? And you wrote down the answer." "No, ma'am, I didn't. Tell the truth." And this went on for about 5 or 10 minutes. Eventually, she made me kneel down in front of the big open fire. A lot of people my age will remember the open fire in the school. And she said, "That's the fires of hell that you're going to now." And then she pulled back my head and she made me look up at this white-faced, blonde-haired, blue-eyed picture that was supposed to represent God. And she said, "Swear the truth before God, before you burn in hell." And on and on and on this way. I couldn't stand the torture by about, I don't know, 2:45 before the clue. And I swore the lie. And it convinced me, as a small child, that I was going to spend the rest of eternity in hell for telling a lie. They turned me into an atheist at a very young age. I'm not one now, by the way. That was just one incident. I've witnessed hundreds of incidents of absolute cruelty and brutality in the school I went to. But I got a little revenge on the master once. I was lucky enough to be sent to look for him when the inspector called. Mm-hmm. And the inspectors in those days spoke Gaeilge the whole time. And Kigger, he looked for volunteers to go looking for the teacher. And I walked very, very slowly that long walk down the playground to where the toilets were. That's where he used to go every day to read the Irish Press and have a nip of his whatever liquid he had in his pocket. And I told him the inspector was. Now, he got a bit of a rollicking, I think. I don't know. That was my only revenge. But a lot of the lads that I often meet up with, week in, week out, and we all tell stories. And these are hard guys now. But I just see their heads drop down, and occasionally you'd see a little trace of a tear in the eye. Tough guys. But they were broken at school. They were broken. Tough days. I'd love to have the opportunity to meet those teachers now. Sorry, did I what?
You do describe an episode where one pupil invited an abusive teacher to his wedding.
Yes. Now, I don't know if this is actually true. Four or five guys said it happened. A few more said it never happened. But it's a great story. He invited this teacher that brutalised him when he was young to his wedding. And he invited him to sit at the top table with his family and the in-laws and outlaws. And he stood up for the speeches and he said, I'd like to make a presentation to my teacher who gave me amazing lessons at school. And I have a little presentation for him. And the teacher stood up and he plunked him one in front of everyone. Nice little revenge.
It's hard to believe, but given what the stories and the reality of what we've been told in the last week, it's not unbelievable. It's not unbelievable. Jamie, thanks indeed. Jamie's in Galway. Before the break, I need to go to Robert. Robert, good afternoon. You're a left-handed. I've heard so many of these. What happened?
Well, I was naturally left-handed. And in national school, I had to learn to write right-handed. And I write naturally right today, naturally left-handed with everything else in my life. And I'm 86 years of age, so I'm not any spring chicken.
And you were forced to write with your right hand.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, but that was par for the course with the teaching fraternity. And I'd say in the school I was in the country now, a national school, I'd say there was a lot of the fellows were the same, and the girls.
And how did they how did they force you, Robert, to change?
The fear of that pencil coming down the top of your head. You know?
Yeah.
Like, it was just, I can see it to this day. But that particular lady that did that, she was taking it out on the dunce in the class, if you like. And the dunce's father was waiting for her when she was going home that evening, or one of the evenings, after some incident.
Yeah.
And he pulled her off the bike, and when he didn't kill her, now he was a quiet man, but like, he was defending his son, who was a bit of a dunce, you know, but turned out to be a terrific farmer and everything else.
Yeah.
So life is full of them. I'm transmogrified, as they say, by the stories, and I'd say every one of them are true, and
of course. Robert Curamina Maga, that's Robert, and kind regards. Joe at RT.ie.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Joe Duffy!
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Teresa, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe.
And you went to school in County Meath. I don't want the name of the school, but it was one female teacher that treated you so badly.
Yes, I was in fourth class and I wasn't very good at maths or the tables, and I used to get a bit mixed up in them. But I think looking back, it could have been maybe dyscalculia or something, I'd say. I have. But she didn't seem to mind what I had. Like, I was, as a small child from the age of 2 until 23, I had nosebleeds frequently. And she used to delight in this when she'd be asking, she'd put the sum up on the board and she'd get me to stand up and I'd stand up at the desk, and she'd ask me, do this now, and I'd write it down. Mm-hmm. And I wouldn't be able to do it because, well, in the beginning, I didn't know she was going to start firing the duster at me. It was a wooden one, On the other side was the eraser part. But I used to cry, and she used to be giving out to me and telling me I was a dope, and I'd never get anywhere for that. But then she realised about the nosebleed, so she used to hit me every day. Every day I got hit with that in maths class, in four class. And she'd leave bruises between my... She'd aim for between the two eyes. She was so... You know, you think it was a dartboard she was aiming for. And the eyes, the precision she had in her eyes, of making sure she'd never miss me, and she never did. And I'm about 8 out of 10 times, nearly, my nose would be bleeding. Then I'd be crying. I wouldn't be able to see anything. Yeah. The blood would be streaming down, and nothing to clean it with at all. She didn't mind, and she'd say things to the class, oh, look at that fool, and look at her nose bleeding. And some of the kids would laugh. Now, some of them wouldn't.
Of course.
But some did. And, I suffered hell with her. And yet I was good at English. I was good at geography. Mm. I wasn't the dope she thought I was. At maths, I wasn't very good at them. And to this day, it has left me with a thing about maths. Yet I've reared my own family and everything. And I used to dread if they would ever have asked me about how to do something. Yeah. Because I wouldn't be great at it. Or if I could do it, I couldn't do it in the way that the teachers nowadays would have done it. But like this lady, she just treated me so badly. And she had kind of a venomous look on her. I didn't know what the word was back then. I wouldn't have been able to describe as a child of 10. But I definitely know she, every day, it was kind of nearly like the theatre, I used to think.
And Teresa, she deliberately threw that duster at you to ignite your nosebleed.
Oh, absolutely, yeah, definitely.
To humiliate you in front of the class.
To humiliate me, because that was one thing she knew that, like.
And if you didn't have tissues or a hanky, the blood goes on. Where does the blood, anyone's got a nosebleed, knows how, the volume, how awful it can be if it can't be stopped.
Just down onto the desk and down on the floor or down on my clothes, didn't matter. And that, you know, she, and then I was left-handed as well, you kid dog. And that, well, and she couldn't change that in me either. She tried to change that, and because she had never had me before. And I was quite a good writer, and I didn't write backhand like a lot of people with left-handed. And there's nothing wrong with how a person writes, but I had quite a good hand, so I wasn't able to change. But but the thing was, it was the maths weakest spot, child's weak spot, and I was the only
Everyone has a weak spot and a strong spot, and it shouldn't lead to that daily humiliation, that daily cruelty, that daily crime against you, Teresa, igniting that nosebleed deliberately.
Yes.
Teresa, thanks indeed. And kind regard. Thank you, Teresa. David, I'm sorry I won't get to everyone again. I'm so sorry. David.
No. Hiya, Joe.
Yeah. A substitute teacher. I did a list there, and I tweeted it on that Joe Liveline of the weapons used on children that have been mentioned on the programme. This is a new one. A gym stick. A pole.
It's a pole we used to do the gym with. And it was hitting my hand. I pulled my hand away. And he decided he'd take me down. He cut me across the knees, got me on the ground, and Joe, he battered me. He absolutely lettered me. That was on the Monday. I was out of school for a few days. Now, Joe, I always played hurling.
Yeah.
But I used to play with the older boys because I was really good at it.
Okay.
Right? And I used to play Saturday afternoon with the older boys.
Right.
But this substitute teacher brother was there playing. And he didn't recognise me. Joe, I went after him.
Okay.
He had the ball, the slitter, on the ball on his right-hand side. And normally he'd come in from the right to get it. But Joe, I ran up on his inside on the left. And I brought my hole down on his leg. And I took the skin from his knee to his butt. And I left him there.
Revenge.
One of the other brothers on the sideline called me and said to me, "Why did you do that?" And I said, "He's the one that battered me last week." Now, I got on great. I was never in trouble in school. I got on. I was in the choir with all, you know, the brothers. I got on great with them all. He was gone out of that school after that.
Never to be seen and again. You know, maybe gone to another school. That's again. What we're hearing as well.
Transferred. Well, not in front of me.
Yeah, transferred.
Joe, I've never told that story.
Yeah.
And I always thought, no, it was wrong to do it, but I felt so good doing it.
Okay.
I know it was wrong. If it was one of my children, I'm almost 70. I would give out if my children done that.
Yeah.
But, Joe, I didn't deserve what he'd done to me.
Here.
So he got it back.
Dahi, got
and
him
I hope... I hope anyone listening that was beaten by the assailant take solace out of it.
And support each other, even across the airwaves, is important. David, thanks indeed. Apologies again to the other callers that were waiting. We will definitely talk to you tomorrow on Sound. James Feeney, Research Richie Byrne, producer Rachel Graham, and Ray Darcy is next.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. Their new autumn range will leave you bursting with ideas. View in-store or at harrycurry.com.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815 or send your WhatsApp voice notes to 087 484 8888.